Hey, this is Mason. Happy Valentine's Day. I am in the Meltdown studio by myself, so I thought, hey, I've got some time and some recording equipment. I will do a Valentine's Day special for Anime Attic, the show where we go into your attic and blow the dust off of old and forgotten anime. And we have a variety of options to talk about. I thought what I would do for Valentine's Day is call random people in my phone and see if I could get a few people to talk about who are their favorite anime couples, and we could talk about it. And it should be pretty fun. I don't know. Let's see what I can do here. I'm going to try my first friend here. It is ringing.
Hello.
Hello, Jim.
Hey, how are you doing, Mason?
I'm good. How are you, man? It's Valentine's Day. How's your Valentine's Day going?
To tell you the truth, it's pretty much just an average day.
Yeah. But,
I went out to eat with my mom. It was pretty good.
Excellent. I'm glad to hear it. Well, I am alone in the Meltdown studio, so I thought I'd call you. And I'm so jazzed
well,
It's
good to know you were thinking of me on Valentine's Day, man.
I was. You were the first one that jumped into my mind. But I thought I'd call and ask you this question.
Okay.
What is your favorite anime couple and why?
My favorite anime couple is going to have to be Ranma and Akane from Ranma One Half.
From Ranma One Half. Oh, good choice.
Yeah.
Oh man, that fits perfectly with the show. Man, we're lucking out here. That's great. Why do you love them so much?
Well, okay, so in order to explain that, I'm going to have to first point out that there's a special caveat when you're talking about Ranma and anime.
Is it
in that?
I have a question. Are you referring to Ranma in his boy form or his girl form?
Ah, well, that's what I'm coming to in the second part of my answer.
Oh, go ahead.
Okay, so in the first part of my answer, I just want to say there's a huge asterisk surrounding the Ranma anime, because I really like the Ranma manga, and in fact, they're now re-releasing the Ranma manga in two-volume omnibus or omnibuy editions.
Oh wow!
And I'm now buying all of the Ranma manga again in omnibus.
Now, correct
manga
me.
Format.
Correct me if I'm wrong. The Ranma manga is huge. It's like never ending. I mean, the anime is like 400 episodes or something.
Yeah, the manga is I think 36 volumes, maybe 37. I don't remember.
Oh man,
it is long, and there's a lot of it. It went on for I don't know, more than 10 years. So it was a long time that she was putting that out.
Yeah, huge. Oh, this is good. We're going to do a show about Ranma at some point. So yeah, this is fascinating.
Yeah. Well, see, with the anime, what they did was they had because it was so long running, they actually had multiple different studios produce different seasons of the Ranma anime. So they're of hugely varying quality, and that's not even getting into the OAVs and the movies. So, like, each studio
would
have
a
completely different art design and totally different character design.
Yeah.
And the thing that drives me crazy is that the different studios that were doing the Ranma anime hewed to different continuities. So there was one studio that stuck very strictly to the manga continuity, and they actually had characters having flashbacks to events that happened in the manga that did not happen in the anime, because in the anime episodes that covered those events, they completely changed things.
Oh, like they just had different events occur?
Yeah, there was one situation where Ranma and Shampoo were involved in a race on a beach where they each held a watermelon. And there's this Japanese traditional beach game that people do where they try to split a watermelon with a bokken. I don't know if you've ever heard of that.
I have. I've heard of it, yes.
So the idea behind this race is it's a foot race where you're carrying a watermelon in one hand and a bokken in the other hand.
And a bokken is like a wooden sword, basically.
Yes, I think it's literally wood sword.
Right.
And you try to smash everyone else's watermelons. So the first person to cross the finish line with an intact watermelon is the winner of the race.
Oh, okay.
This is what they did in the manga. And then in the anime, they replaced this with a downhill skiing competition where everyone was holding a snowman in one hand. And they tried to destroy each other's snowmen. And the first person to get across the finish line with a snowman intact was the winner.
I wonder why.
I have no idea. I think it's because it must have been that episode was released during the winter instead of during the summer, so they wanted it to be like seasonally appropriate.
Oh, that's smart. I was gonna suggest that maybe they were gonna release it internationally, and they were like, nobody outside of our country will understand this game.
Well, maybe, but they were using the Japanese style two ball snowman instead of the Western three ball snowman.
Oh, okay. Good point.
So I don't know, but. In a later season, done by a different studio, the characters had a flashback to the beach watermelon foot race.
which did not occur.
Yeah, it was replaced with the downhill skiing snowman race.
Oh, man.
So the way that most people, the way that I think about it, and I think the proper way to think about it, is you imagine the manga has the canon continuity, and then the anime is like a series of long and not particularly good fan fiction based on the manga.
Okay. We have a concept that we talk about on Anime Attic that Zara came up with called alternate universe yet canonical storytelling.
So it's sort of like Tenchi Muyo.
Tenchi Muyo is an excellent example, but I was also thinking, you know, Rainbow One Half or Escaflowne, or any time that they just reimagine stuff and go on with it, you know?
Yeah. Well, so that was my caveat for Roundup.
Okay, caveat noted.
So
which one are you talking about?
Well, I'm talking mostly about the manga anime. I'm sorry, the manga, not the anime.
Okay.
And some seasons of the anime were pretty good, some were really terrible.
I have, and this may be the lens of nostalgia, but I have fond memories of watching Ranma One Half. I think it was great all around.
Yeah,
but you probably have good points, you know.
Yeah, Chris and I used to go because Chris lives like a block away from me, and when we were kids, we would meet at my mom's house, and then we would walk and leave it at like 10:30 at night and walk up to Blockbuster, which closed at 11.
Oh.
And so we would get in like 10 minutes before they close, and then go to their very small anime section they had and grab copies of like.
Yeah.
Tenchi and the Ranma and just whatever they had.
On VHS.
On VHS.
Yeah.
And we would then go to Giant and buy cheese cubes and shrimp shapes. The shrimp shapes were these chopped pressed fish products that were shaped like shrimp but didn't actually contain any shrimp.
Gross.
And then we would eat the cheese cubes on the walk home, and cook the shrimp shapes, and then watch anime all night.
It was great. Yeah, that sounds like a great Valentine's Day activity. Maybe I should get in on that tonight before it's too late.
Well, you can try. I mean, you're on the West Coast now, so it should be easier.
That's true. Okay, so you're talking about the manga. You're talking about Ranma and Akane. That's your favorite anime couple. Why?
Okay, so I read a really good fan fiction for Rama.
Okay.
That I liked a lot. I don't know if you can plug fan fiction on your show, but
sure.
It was called Comes the Cold Dragon. And,
I'm sorry, what's it called?
It was called Comes the Cold Dragon. It was very long, but sadly unfinished.
As is wont with most fan fiction.
Yes, most fan fiction is sadly unfinished, except for the ones that are terrible, which are fortunately unfinished.
Okay, so you read that.
Yeah, so I read that one, and I really liked the way that the author interpreted the Rama and Akane relationship, which really informed the way I think about it.
Okay, and what is your view?
Well, the idea that I like is that Rama and Akane are attracted to one another, which seems perfectly reasonable since they, you know, they live in the same house.
Yes, I
agree. It's difficult.
I agree with this. Like they do seem to actually share feelings for each other.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's perfectly natural for teenagers who, you know, spend a lot of time around one another, as they do. They walk to school together every day. They go to all the same classes. Or Japanese school works a little differently than American school. But anyway, they're in the same class. They do a lot of activities together. So it's natural that they would have a close relationship. And also the idea that I really liked is the idea that Akane is secretly bisexual.
Okay.
And so she feels attraction for Rama's female form as well as, or possibly even more so than she does for Rama's male form. And this makes Akane feel incredibly uncomfortable with herself.
She
is very much... So Akane is very much in denial about her feelings for girl-type Rama, and therefore lashes out at him for being a pervert, because she thinks of herself as a good girl, just like her big sister Kasumi.
Mm-hmm.
So Akane obviously cannot be attracted to a girl. That's just unnatural. So therefore Rama must be the pervert who's making Akane feel this way, and that's why Akane is, she's rejecting Rama, she's violent towards him, she pushes him away as much as she can, but she actually is attracted to him, so she can't, like, completely get rid of him, you know what I mean?
Yeah, because in the anime, at several points, I mean, they do actually share romantic moments together, you know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. They do that in the manga, too.
Right.
And if you look in the manga, at least, whenever Rama and Akane come closest to kissing, it's almost always when Rama is in his female form.
Right. Interesting. Interesting, Jim. I had not thought of this. So this theory was put forth in the fan fiction, not the anime or the manga.
No, not really. But one of the other things that makes this somewhat more plausible is that Rama feels much more comfortable expressing his feelings while he's in his female form.
That makes sense. Because women in general are more comfortable expressing their feelings. Yes?
Yeah.
Gotcha.
And especially in Rama's case, because Rama has spent his whole life being taught by his father that men are supposed to be, you know, the stoic, manly type. Like, you know,
I'm sorry, can you repeat that? There was some static. Just start over.
Yeah, okay.
Start over with Rama has spent his entire life. Go ahead.
Yeah, so Rama has spent his entire life being taught by his father that men are supposed to be the stoic, manly types, like Guts or Glogo 13, and that they're not supposed to be all gushy and feminine.
Right.
And so, I actually don't know if that guy's name is Glogo 13. Anyway.
His actual name is Duke Togo. But he is Agent Gogo 13, yes.
Yeah, close enough.
It's okay. I know who you're talking about.
So, so Genma has been teaching Rama to be a stoic, manly man.
Right.
And this leads back to talking about Genma's cowardness, but we can save that for a later discussion.
Sure.
But so Rama thinks that a man is supposed to not even have feelings. And then when Rama has feelings for Akane, he has no idea how to express them. He doesn't know what to do with himself when he finds himself actually interested in a girl, because mm-hmm. he has almost no experience of women. His only female friend that he's ever had was Ukyo, and he only knew Ukyo when she was very young, and he thought she was a boy.
Right. Yeah, so Rama One Half does an excellent job playing with gender roles and gender bending. That's kind of its thing for anyone.
Oh yeah.
For anyone who hasn't seen it. But
that's one of the aspects of the series that I like a lot. The exploration of what gender means and how the different characters portray their gender differently.
Right.
Like one of the really interesting things about the series is that Shampoo is a Amazon.
Right.
But if you look at the way that the characters are grouped, Shampoo is, whenever the guys are doing an activity, Shampoo will be included with the guys in the activity rather than being sent off with the girls.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
So like when they go to fight Pantyhose Taru,
right,
in the manga anyway, Shampoo is part of the party that goes to fight him.
Right. Okay.
So not only does she present herself as sort of, so Shampoo is very feminine and she's very masculine at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
But the other characters seem to think of her as being like a guy.
Right.
Because that's like the closest way that they can fit her into their preconceptions of gender roles.
Right. Yeah. That's fascinating stuff. Thanks. We should definitely have you back when we do Rama One Half. This is fascinating stuff. So
yeah, well, I'd have to watch the series, but
well, I mean, that can happen. I hear they're doing a re-release on DVD now. They're re-releasing all four seasons or whatever. But anyway, okay. So is your favorite couple Rama and Akane in boy form or girl form? And what about it is such a great couple?
Well, I would say that Rama and Akane, with Rama in either form.
Okay.
I prefer an idea of Akane accepting her feelings towards Rama as a girl, and that reinforcing her feelings towards him as a guy, and then Rama opening up to Akane as a girl, and then sort of that bleeds over into his expression of his feelings towards her as a guy.
Okay, but
so
that,
I would.
But that doesn't actually happen in the anime.
It does not.
So why are they your favorite? I'm a little lost.
Well, see, this goes back to my earlier caveat.
Okay.
Where I consider the anime of Rama to be just fan fiction for Rama.
Okay. But
it's true that Akane and Rama don't actually express their feelings to one another in the manga, but there's much more subtext to the ending of the manga, where it's very clear that Rama and Akane are sort of going forth to face the world together at the end.
Oh, okay. Cool. Because
I haven't
read the manga. I've only seen the anime, and the anime left on quite a cliffhanger.
Yeah, well, the anime, I haven't seen most of the anime. I haven't seen all of the anime. So I'm in sort of the opposite position, where I've read the manga, and I really like the manga.
Sure.
And it's one of my favorite series.
Yeah.
So yeah, then what I really like about the Rama and Akane is the sort of the aspect of non-normative gender that is, as you said, is a theme that runs throughout the whole series.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not a really big fan of, like, gender identification in general.
Like traditional gender identification?
I don't really like any kind of gender labeling. I think that the idea of gender is just far too complicated to be able to simply express a huge category that encompasses half the population. Just doesn't make any sense.
Wow. That's heavy, man. All right. I this is new to me, but rock on, man. That's super cool.
All right. So, so Ranma and Akane are my favorite anime couple because they explored a lot of really, there's a lot of depth in the writing, in the manga anyway.
Yeah, and their feelings are usually fairly genuine and honest, which I appreciate, which I think is cool.
Yeah, that's true.
Cool, man. Well, thanks, Jim. Thanks for talking to me. I really appreciate it, man. And I hope you have a wonderful rest of the evening and rock out over in your neck of the woods.
All right. Well, good luck, Mason.
All right. Thanks, man. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Okay, that went pretty good. Let's see. Who else do I got going on here? Let's try Raven. I hear she's at a con right now. Let's see what's going on with her. I wonder if we'll get her. Maybe.
Hello.
Raven, what's going on?
Hey.
Hey, happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day.
How are you?
Or Singles Awareness Day, as it is often called.
Now that's what I'm operating under. I am singly in the Meltdown studio right now, and I thought, hey, I'll do a pickup show of Anime Attic, calling people randomly on my phone and being like, what is your favorite anime couple and why? But first, Raven, what are you doing? What are you doing today? How are you celebrating today?
I am sending all of my friends Valentine's, very, very nerdy ones. I think I have, I ended up with a swath of Harry Potter, The Force Awakens, and Deadpool.
Oh,
lovely,
yeah.
Lovely Deadpool, which is super appropriate, Valentine's to send to all my friends. I think my favorite one is the Dementor behind the Three Kisses booth.
Oh, yes, that was a good one. I got that one, and I enjoyed it. It was very good. Thank you.
Yes, I'm glad you enjoyed your Valentine.
Yes, I did.
There's another favorite of mine. There's one with Captain Hook that says, I'm hooked on you from Once Upon a Time.
That's pretty good as well. Okay. I sounds like you're busy. So I just have a quick question for you.
I have a quick answer.
Oh, well, we'll see. What is your favorite anime couple and why?
Ooh, only one? Okay.
We can do more than one if you can squeeze it, but go ahead. Okay, if you can squeeze it.
To start off, my favorite anime couple of all time is Chrono and Rosette from Chrono Crusade.
Yes, which we definitely have to do for sure.
Oh, absolutely. We will indubitably cover it.
Absolutely. Okay, so what? Why? What are these people? Fill me in.
Okay, so the brief synopsis of Chrono and Rosette's relationship is that it takes place in the 1920s in New York.
Cool.
And it takes place about this 12-year-old girl who, by the time we actually see her in the series, is 16, but she meets Chrono when she is 12 with her brother. Her brother is kidnapped by the demon that has stolen Chrono's horns, because Chrono himself is also a demon.
Okay.
In order for Chrono to continue functioning, he needs to siphon off Rosette's life force, because she makes a deal with him so that she can recover her brother and he can recover his horns.
Okay, so they're like bonded.
They're bonded. And it's this really, really sweet story, and their friendship very much slowly transitions into more. And even though nothing is fully realized because of spoiler ending, it's still one of the sweetest and most heart-wrenching love stories that I've ever seen in anime.
Man, that's a good one. All right, I'm definitely curious. I wanna check that out for sure.
You will cry. You will cry like a baby girl, and
man,
I will laugh.
These are bold statements, Raven. right. Well, very possibly. Okay. Well, what's your other couple on the off chance that I have heard of it?
Okay. I thoroughly enjoy our good old Orin High School host club couple.
Oh, this is another one that I haven't seen, but you
obviously are... I'm talking about the twins.
Yeah, you are not
I'm
alone.
Kidding. I'm not actually talking about the twins.
I haven't actually seen
Orin. I am talking about Haruhi and Tamaki.
Okay. Okay, cool. Because I haven't seen Orin Host Club, but I got to tell you, at the anime convention that we went to, everybody was talking to me about Orin Host Club.
Well, Orin High School Host Club is a pillar of our generation of anime.
Why?
It came out, I want to say in 2010. And it was watched by all of us as we were going through that lovely end of high school, early college phase. And it was one of the first really well voice acted, really well done anime.
Okay. Are you...
It's kind of all around well done. Short enough, complete, comedy.
Is it an OVA or is it a series?
No, it's a full series. It's 24 or 25 episodes.
Okay. And what about this relationship really spoke to you?
The fact that it very much developed naturally.
Oh.
Naturally as far as an anime is concerned.
Sure.
Where it was the moment of they're growing close to each other and getting even closer as friends, and they're starting to protect each other, and then they start getting jealous, and they're like, wait, why am I jealous? Oh my gosh, do I have feelings for this person? And frankly, the denseness of Haruhi when it comes to Tamaki made me extremely happy.
Oh, really? You like that? You like the oblivious guy?
I thought it was hilarious.
Okay.
Because usually in anime, it's the male character who's super dense and doesn't realize his feelings for the female character. So
right.
It's really nice to see that turned on its head.
That's cool. Because, yeah, you're right. That is a staple of... most harem animes where the guy is literally surrounded by, I don't know, 10 or 12 really awesome girls who all want to get with him, and he's just oblivious. He's just completely oblivious.
It's true. However, there is now the hism anime, or the female harem anime, where it's a bunch of guys who want to get with the main girl, and she has the choice.
Oh, yeah.
But those are far less prevalent.
Yeah, they're less prevalent, but they have been around for quite some time. Like Fushigi Yugi, for example, is definitely one of those. As is,
I mean, I don't know what you're talking about. That's totally just an amazing fantasy story told about that takes place in a book in ancient China.
Of course,
that's not a hism situation in any way, shape, or form.
Aside from the multiple beautiful men who are all kind of hovering around this girl, waiting for her attention. Yeah, so
this not very well developed girl character, the almost Bella Swan of the anime industry.
Ooh,
would I say?
Good one. Mental high five there, Raven. We'll have to hit on that one. Okay, cool. Well, yeah, thanks. I don't want to keep you from your stuff. You sound busy, but I just wanted to check in with you and chat and see how things were going and get your thoughts on that. So thanks. So we'll definitely have to do Chrono Crusade and Orin Host Club, perhaps. Well, no, Orin Host Club is too modern for our show.
Well, we could still cover it just for funsies.
Maybe.
What you could do is
talk about the manga. If there's a manga, you could talk about the manga.
There is a manga. I don't know it very well.
Oh my god.
It's because it's the exact same as the anime, and I watched the anime first.
Right, and this falls into your category of where you don't like the same thing.
Speaking of manga.
Speaking of
manga.
Yes. Lay it on me.
I'm going to give you two different couples from manga that are some of my favorites.
Oh, man.
And one of them you might not be able to put on the show because it's from a
yaoi.
It's from like a 16 plus manga.
Okay.
Which would be Setsuna and Aine from Sensual Phrase.
Never heard of it. What's the deal with them?
It's a really cool story of how this very much this hot and heavy, very like quick burning relationship is able to catch fire and then also take that intensity into a full, like, relationship. And they go through a lot of issues, and they're able to solve them because their love is stronger than their issues.
That sounds cool. And yeah. Is it two guys or what?
No, it's a guy and a girl.
Okay. That sounds cool. I'll check that out. That sounds tight.
Yeah.
I like
it definitely gets 18 plus in some volume, 18 volume series, but it's,
you know, we'll deal with that. But I'm always a fan of Love Conquers All. I like that. That's my general viewpoint in life.
Would you like my favorite couple from a non 18 plus anime?
Yeah, of course.
Or from a non 18 plus manga?
Yes, please. Lay it on us.
Okay. My favorite non 18 plus manga couple is going to have to be, oh God, I had one and then I forgot it.
Oh man.
Oh, from Red River. Red River.
Red River. I know the film Red River is a...
No, it has nothing to do with the film. It is a story set in ancient Mesopotamia.
Oh, cool.
Where a Japanese girl, Yuri, is kidnapped by the evil queen through the water, pulled through time, and pulled through space to end up in ancient Mesopotamia because she is going to be sacrificed to God so that the evil queen's son will be the next king, even though he's 6 foot blind to the throne. And she's saved by the Prince Kale, who promises to send her home, and through time and him protecting her and everything else, they both realize that they have feelings for each other, and she ends up staying instead of going back to Japan and becomes this ancient ruler of ancient Mesopotamia who knows Nefertiti and King Ramses and all of these other things through interactions that happen through the series.
And I would assume becomes essentially the mother of a nation of Japan.
Not the mother of the nation of Japan, but a mother of the nation in ancient Mesopotamia.
Right, so way, way back. That, so wait, why? I mean, this sounds like a fascinating series as well, but why... Why does the queen have to pull someone from the future to sacrifice? Why can't she sacrifice someone there?
She did not choose. Mm-hmm. The queen did not choose who she was going to pull.
Uh-huh.
The queen asked the water god to send her the sacrifice, and she reached into the water, and Yuri was chosen.
Interesting. Okay.
By the water gods of ancient Mesopotamia.
And it's never discussed why they chose her. That's never mentioned.
Correct. It is not.
Interesting, although a little disappointing. Well, that sounds really good. Yeah. I'll check that out too. So yeah, we've got some stuff coming up.
Oh, we will cover it when we have time.
Yeah,
we will cover it. It's
definitely one
of my favorite manga series of all time.
Yeah, it sounds great. I'm gonna check it out after I hang up. Well, not immediately,
sounds
but
good.
after I get done with this. But anyway, well, thanks for talking to me, and thanks for this, and have yourself a happy Valentine's Day doing whatever you're doing. Rock on.
All right, sounds good. I will see you next week.
All right, sounds good. All right, bye-bye.
All right, bye.
Well, that was pretty fascinating. Oh, man, I forgot to ask her, like, why she was really into those characters. We'll get her on the show next week. So let's see who else do I got here?
What's up, Mason?
Hey, Tess, how are you? What's going on?
I'm good. How are you, dude?
I'm good. Happy Valentine's Day.
Yes, same to you.
Good, good. Thank you. I am currently, or Single Awareness Day, I am currently sitting in Meltdown Comics' studio, and I decided to do a Valentine's Day special for Anime Attic, which is, of course,
cool.
your favorite podcast of all time.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I'm calling around. I'm calling random people on my phone, friends of mine, and I'm calling them to ask them, well, A, how's your Valentine's Day? What are you doing? Anything cool?
I am hanging out with my cat.
Yes.
And my roommate.
Okay.
My cat has been sitting on my lap for a while.
Oh, well, that's the good stuff. That's
life of a single lady.
Hey, that's that's all right. You know, Tess, you're a wonderful, beautiful woman. You will not be you will not be single for long.
Well, thank you.
Sure. Okay, so here's my question. Tess, you are an avid anime watcher. You and I often talk about anime.
Mm-hmm,
what is true. Your what? Who are your favorite anime couples, and why? Think about
well,
it.
Well, I can think of several anime couples. I'll probably tell you the ones that I remember the most, because some animes I've watched multiple times.
Sure.
So I would say for those it would be like Miyaka and Tamahome from Fushigi Yugi.
Aha! We were just, right before I called you, I was talking with Raven from the show, and she mentioned that they're the female harem anime series, and I said Fushigi Yugi. And she tried to deny that was a female harem, but please.
I don't really see it as a female harem anime.
Well, I mean, obviously it's kind of low key, but it is multiple beautiful men hovering around this girl, kind of hoping that they pay attention to them. Yes, that she pays.
Yeah, that's true.
Yes.
She clearly only has eyes for Tamahome, like. From the beginning, all the way through, she's completely devoted to him.
Oh yeah. Okay, so this is good.
Yeah.
So I haven't actually seen Fushigi Yugi yet. We're
playing.
I know. I've seen the manga and I've seen like one or two episodes, but I am planning on sitting down and watching it so we can do it for the show. But but why? What about? So tell me a little bit about this couple and why you're so into them.
Well, I mean, I'm probably very into them because I really love the anime. It's very like it's very much like soap opera in the anime, because there's a lot of like love triangle stuff going on. Miyaka does only have eyes for Tamahome pretty much throughout the whole anime, but I think also
I was gonna say like where's
you know,
the triangle?
She's 14, so like there's, like you said, there's other men in the anime who want her attention, and she likes that. Like, her character clearly is like, oh my god, attention from men, you know, so she, like, considers that attention and doesn't know what to do with it at times. But,
right.
I mean, her affections are pretty much loyal to Tamahome. So what happens is she gets transported to another world, and emperor of one of the kingdoms is like all into her. His name is Totohori.
It's ancient China, right? She's a modern she's a modern, I guess, Japanese girl who's transported to ancient China through a book, if I remember.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Go ahead.
And Emperor Totohori is enamored of her.
Of course.
And she, I think she considers, from what I remember, I think she sort of considers it, but she's all about Tamahome.
And
of course, he rejects her, like, all the time, and he's, like, an idiot. And she's like, oh, that hurts, and then she runs back towards him. You know?
Now, is he he's a palace guard, isn't he?
No.
Oh, okay. Who is Tamahome?
Tamahome, I don't remember exactly how she meets him, but I know that he's, like, she meets him and she thinks that he's like this con artist, cheapskate, trying to get money off of people.
Oh, okay. So he's like in the street, kind of.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, later on in the series, you find out that he's trying to support his family.
Oh,
he's always trying to make a buck.
Of gold, yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, why are they my favorite couple? I don't know. I just remember them really well, I guess.
Well, I mean, something about it must have spoken to you. Like, something about something about their relationship must have struck a chord,
I guess,
right?
I don't know. I guess it's, like, very reflective of how a teenager behaves and thinks a lot of the time.
Were
and
you
I
a,
saw that when I was I first saw it when I was a teenager.
I was gonna say, like, you must have seen it when you were a teenager. Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, sure.
Were you also falling in love with a ne'er-do-well street urchin who had a heart of gold and was supporting his family?
No, I fell in love with ne'er-do-wells generally.
Right.
I wouldn't say the other half of that equation existed.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. But perhaps perhaps that aspect spoke to you.
Maybe. I don't know. I really like the whole adventure of the story about getting trapped in another world.
Yeah.
It was fun. It's just the drama of their relationship was very entertaining. And
sure.
It kind of hooked me, you know.
Yeah. And,
the other what's that?
And they did a lot of will they won't they, right? And you were kind of on the
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. And then there's other love triangles that happen too, you know. There's her Yaka's best friend. I can't remember her name now. She somehow gets trapped in the book with her, but in a different kingdom.
Oh, wow.
And there's kind of a love triangle between her and Tomohome and Miyaka.
Is she also into Tomohome and he's unsure who he wants to be with?
No, more like she's in league with someone else from another kingdom, and to be like those some kind of poison brainwashing on Tomohome.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
yes.
and then she's like, he's mine, and then he's like, he thinks he's hers, but he's whatever. He's like under mind control.
Okay. So what about him do you like? Is it that he was a jerk, but then he turns around and he's cool, or I don't know?
I guess so. I guess that's what I liked, you know, when I was initially attached to the series.
Uh-huh.
Now my attachment to it is just nostalgic.
I
see. Because I like it as a younger person.
Sure.
The other couple that I was thinking of was Vaughn and Hitomi.
Oh, yeah. In Escaflowne,
you know?
Yeah. You are.
Their relationship is so fraught with, like, intense frustration and you know.
Yeah. No.
You're always wondering what's going to happen with them, and there's a lot of tension between the two of them.
Yeah, and it's good that you mentioned this. We're actually planning on doing an Escaflowne episode, you're not alone. Let me tell you, Juliana joins us for that episode, and she is also a Van Hitomi fan. But yeah, there's a whole bunch that goes on there. There's Alan Chizar. And Hitomi and Vaughn, and are they going to get together? And what about Meru, the cat girl? And, you know, it goes on, man. But, this is my beef with that relationship, is that it's never, ever realized in any way. Like,
no,
even
it's not.
At the end.
And that drove me nuts.
Yeah, it drove me nuts, too. And then there was a movie, and they didn't resolve it in the movie either. You're like, what's going on? Like, all I want is just a kiss. They don't. Anyway,
Yeah. I thought surely by the last episode of the series, in the very last scene.
Yeah, spoiler.
It would be, you know, they'd have their rainbow. And that didn't happen. Like, you know, he's just sitting on a rock with a sparkling necklace.
Yeah, that's it. No, she's literally like, you know, it's great that we can be together now. I'm gonna go home back to Earth. But don't worry,
yeah.
I can see you anytime. .. And
yeah,
then that's
that
it.
Ridiculous. Oh, they man. Spend the two of them spend a lot of like they waste a lot of time trying to figure out how they feel, and
yeah,
they figure it out by doing stupid shit to one another. I'm sorry, should I not be cursing?
I can beep it. It's okay, but
okay,
or we'll do it again. They figure it out by doing stupid stuff. Go ahead, and say that.
Yeah, they figure it out by how they figure out how they feel about each other by just behaving stupidly.
Yes.
But I mean they're also teenagers, so like you have to take that into account, you know.
I know, but like I agree with you though, because time is pretty precious, right? Like she's not gonna be on the planet forever. Like
right.
It's right. Interesting that you point that out. So what about their relationship do you like so much if it's fraught with indecision and wasting
there is
time?
Something, there's Yeah, there's something about their relationship that just ties into the whole idea of fate, which is kind of like what the whole, you know, part of what the whole series is about.
Sure.
Like they have the feel of it is that they're just destined to be together, you know.
Yeah.
And it's very strongly, I don't know, it just comes across very strongly in the series. And like you're rooting for them the whole time.
Sure.
It's not like in Fushigi Yugi where I'm watching Miyaka and Tamahome behave like 14-year-olds. With Vaughn and Hitomi, it's more like I really want to see them happy together. You know, there's a different kind of feeling that I get from watching the two of them. And they seem to have much more heavy things resting on their shoulders, you know?
Oh, yeah. Well, they're running around saving the world. Like, well, I don't know.
Right.
I mean, in Fushigi Yugi, is she saving the Empire? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, she basically is, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
so it's kind of the same. It's kind of the same.
It is and it isn't. I mean, like, I don't know. Escaflowne is a little bit more mature in some ways. Like, it's a little bit darker. It's not, I wouldn't necessarily think of it as a dark anime, but
it's got some heavy issues. Like, there's murder and there's illegitimate children and affairs and stuff like that.
Yeah. The characters are also a little more introspective.
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely. I would agree with that for sure.
Especially if you told me, like, she spends a lot of time, like, examining her feelings and not being sure of herself and then, like,
right.
trying to figure out where to go from there.
Yeah, like, she doesn't know who she likes. She actually likes Alan for a long time. She's really into Alan and then slowly kind of comes around to Vaughn.
Yeah. The most intense moment between the two of them is there's one scene where he's like polishing the sword for Escaflowne.
Uh-huh.
And she comes over to him. And I think this is after Meryl is like, don't hurt him or something. She said something to her.
Yeah.
And Hitomi comes over to him and he's like, he looks like he's being bashful. You know, like, because his head is down and he's focused on polishing the sword and he, like, mumbles, like, I need you. And she's like, hmm?
Yeah.
And she thought he meant something else and she clearly wanted it to mean something else.
Sure, yeah.
And they're both, doesn't he give her, like, a piscus fruit at that point? Am I wrong?
Maybe.
No, I think the piscus is in another scene. But
okay.
Then he's like, I need your power, and I need to be able to do what you can do, and she gets really mad, and you hear the sound of the slap, and then he just continues polishing the sword.
Oh, that's right. She's like, I'm not it. That's when he's like, I need you to teach me how to see the guy melts, mm-hmm. or predict where Zyback's going to attack next, and she gets really pissed, and she's like, I'm not a tool. You can't just use
right,
me.
She
like
slaps him.
Yeah.
So she thinks he's going to say one thing.
Right.
And he's polishing his sword. What's that about? And, I mean, if you want to look at it that way.
He's just working
him,
the nicks out of his 8-foot-long sword. What are you worried about? Yeah.
But there's one other scene that's really intense like that. And I don't remember the conversation that they're having, but they're both having, he gives her a piscus fruit and it's like he cuts the top off and they're sipping out of it with straws.
Uh-huh.
And then he says something, I don't remember who says what, but she gets either shocked or upset by something and she drops the fruit and it's clearly another moment of tension between the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
And when she drops the fruit, the animation goes to the fruit on the floor and it's just, it's very, very sexual. And I always thought that was very interesting that they put that in there.
Huh. I'll have to keep an eye out for that. I don't remember that.
Well, should I describe it?
Please, for our listeners.
Okay, so she she drops the fruit, and you see the fruit on its side.
Uh-huh.
And the way that, I will say the camera, even though there's no camera, is pointed at it, is that the perspective is that you're peering into the fruit. And it's just like, you see the, it looks like a big round hole.
Huh.
And it's dripping a semi-translucent whitish liquid that's slightly viscous.
Wow.
And, well, do I, need I say more?
No, I think we're good. And what do you think is the point of this? That she was getting excited that he was giving her fruit? I don't know. What are you saying?
I think it was like expressing disappointment on her behalf.
But wouldn't it be the other way around? I'm confused. I mean, yes.
I remember the scene is her dropping the fruit.
Okay, so right. So it's a ruined fruit. Like it was a good time waiting to be had.
Yeah, like she was being, excuse me, like her impression of the conversation was that it was going one way.
Right.
Not necessarily that the conversation was necessarily going in a sexual way, but that it was going in
a good way.
A good way, affectionately, emotionally.
Okay. Yeah.
Towards, you know, like the mutual feelings that they had for each other that they had yet to admit to.
Okay.
And whatever happened, it didn't end up, you know, I think he started out giving that impression and then he was like not ready to express it. So he ended up saying something else.
Uh-huh. Which killed the mood, I guess.
Yeah. So the fruit is like, you know, well, I was happy.
And so,
you know.
Yeah, no, I mean, that sounds amazing. I'm definitely going to keep my eye out for it.
I have to watch that scene again because I don't remember exactly what they were talking about.
Right.
But I remember the fruit, and I've had conversations about this fruit scene with so many people because everybody,
I mean,
this
is fascinating.
Like, what's that about?
Yeah. No, this is fascinating. I want to talk about the fruit now, like.
Yeah, I kind of feel like Dr. Ruth when I talk about
that. A little bit. I could see it. But, I mean, it sounds like you have, you know, you have evidence on your side. Like, you're not talking out of nowhere. So.
Well, if you watch it, you know,
yeah.
I think you're right, then I don't. But.
That's cool. I'm down.
It's going
down.
Based on my memory.
No. This is fascinating. So, what about this couple? What about these two couples make them your favorite? I'm just curious.
Well, like I said, for Fushigi Yugi, it's really nostalgia.
Sure.
And in Fushigi Yugi, like, they get their happy ending.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, they get married and
Spoiler, but yeah, okay.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No,
sorry,
it's fine. No, I'm joking.
No, listen, we
do spoilers all the time in the show. We talk about it. It's impossible not to have spoilers.
They get married and they end up having a baby.
Aw. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's really sweet. You know, and a lot of animes don't do that. A lot of animes leave you with this, like, kind of disappointment.
Yeah, no.
When you were hoping for a happy ending.
Yeah, we were talking about that. Before I was talking to you, I was talking to Jim. We were talking about Ranma One Half and how they just kind of cliffhang it. And Vaughn and Hitomi is another. They just kind of cliffhang it. It's like they don't want to. It's like they don't want to resolve stuff at all.
Mm-hmm.
Because I guess, is it better to keep the viewer guessing so they tune in next week? Because, you know, because like I said, I watched the Escaflowne movie strictly, well, not strictly, but mainly on the hope that it would get resolved.
Mm-hmm.
But it was not, so.
The movie is not, it's not like entirely contiguous with the series.
No, it's an alternate take. It's a,
yeah.
Yeah, it's like a fan fiction
almost.
It's
cool in its own right. It's cool in its own right. I will admit that.
Yeah, I mean, it looks cool and all that stuff. It's okay, but it's not necessarily a sequel or anything. It's like a re-envisioning.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Which I'm not sure was the correct way to go about it, but whatever. It's cool.
Well, the series was great.
Yes.
Escaflowne
was great. Yeah, we're definitely going to do the series. Like, that's happening and that's coming. Anyway.
Mm-hmm.
All right, cool. Well, thanks, Tess. Good talking with you. Cool. And
thanks for calling me, Nathan.
Yeah, sure. No,
I feel very special that you decided to call me as one of the people to talk to.
Oh, yeah, no, you're always in my phone and on my mind. I'm happy to call you and looking forward to talking to you again in the future.
All right. Great.
All right, cool. Well, thanks. Have a good, happy Valentine's Day, and I'll talk to you soon.
Same to you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Wow. So this is going pretty good so far. I think we got time for one more. Let's see who else I can bug here. Maybe this guy. This guy might be a good one. Let's see. No? Maybe not.
Hello.
Hey, Rob. How's it going, man?
It's good. It's good.
All right. It's me. It's Mason. I'm calling you. I'm calling you on the air. Because I am alone in the Meltdown studio, and I'm calling to see how your Valentine's Day is going so far, man. What's going on?
Not a whole lot.
Yeah.
Valentine's Day is an empty and quiet time.
Yes. I refer to it, of course, as Single Awareness Day myself. So we're dealing with that. I'm with you, brother. I'm with you. So, cool. So what are you doing? You just chilling at home?
Yep, I'm actually just back from some singles awareness wargaming. Singles, all wargaming, no women within 100 miles.
Oh, wow, man. How'd you do? Did you kick butt?
Not bad. I did not do badly. You know, I didn't win, but I gave a good account.
That's unusual for you to lose. You're usually very good. I'm actually very surprised. I guess the caliber at the table is very high.
Yeah, and without going into too much detail, this particular game is a tough game to win at outright.
Oh, okay, like the rules are very difficult or whatever.
Yeah.
I got you. All right, well, as you are no doubt aware, Rob, I run the podcast Anime Attic, and so I'm calling. I wanted to ask you a question. Rob, who is your favorite anime couple and why? And I thought we could discuss it.
If I had to pick, it would in fact be the love triangle. Because Chijio, Minmei, and Misa Hayase from Super Dimension Fortress Macross.
Oh man, Macross. Oh, what a good choice. Oh, I didn't even see that coming. Good job, Rob. So here's the good. Okay, so tell us a little bit. We haven't reviewed this one on the show yet, but we totally should. And that's a great idea. Let me write that down. But so tell us a little bit about the show. Like what's the concept and who are these characters? Real quick.
Well, it is the first of the Macross franchise in Japan, but it also became the first part of the Robotech franchise here in the States. And
that's right.
A lot of those of us of a more old school bent probably were introduced to anime by that series.
Yeah, I remember basically Super Dimensional Fortress Macross was bought and rebranded and also, I think, rewritten as Robotech in the United States. But then later, they released the original Robotech uncut, right?
Yeah, you can get both the Robotech version and the original Super Dimension Fortress Macross. And they're different in a whole bunch of interesting and subtle ways.
Yeah, like the Americans just took the footage and then basically like rewrote the plot and just dubbed in an entire new script, right?
Well, they added new elements and new plot things to kind of connect it to the other two previously completely unrelated anime that became the second and third series of Robotech.
Interesting. Yeah.
But, you know, reminder. Of those three series, the Macross is the one with the transforming jets that look kind of like F-14s,
right.
And Reba West as the voice of Lin-May singing kind of sketchy.
Yeah, I should actually see if I can find a sound clip. I'll put that in. That's a good one. Yeah, so, okay. So, very loosely, the concept of this, if I remember correctly, it's kind of like Battlestar Galactica, sort of. They're in this super spaceship that's built out of alien technology, and I guess they're out on a test flight or something, and they get warped, like, across the universe, and they have to try and make it back home on limited supplies and survive, right? Am I remembering that correctly?
Sort of like that. They're about to launch the ship for the first time.
Yeah.
The Zentradi, who are the alien baddies, come to take it back, and they space the Pluto. They have to get back to Earth, and eventually they do, and then it turns into a ginormous post-apocalyptic thing where these Zentradi attack Earth and devastate everything, and yeah, it's epic.
Yeah, I remember this as being one of the very first, like, space operas that I'd ever seen, and it's sweeping in its scope and storyline. It's just, you follow these people for years in their lives as they continue to go through this stuff, yeah?
I remember it chiefly as a child for the offhanded way in which they murdered major characters.
That's right.
You know, I grew up watching G.I. Joe, where everybody parachutes out of the plane all the time.
That's right.
And especially in episode 19, where they kill Ben Dixon, and they just kill him offhandedly. I was like, oh, man, this is new.
Oh, man. Spoiler for anybody about to watch episode 19. But yeah. Yes, I remember. Yeah, they were not shy about killing off characters, which was fascinating in and of itself. Okay, so who are the three members of your love triangle, and why is this love triangle your favorite?
Okay, well, it's my favorite, I think, first because it's the first love triangle I ever remember putting any emotional energy into watching anime.
Yeah, that's heavy.
You know, the first time I was, like, rooting for somebody to get together.
You really?
And, yeah.
Okay.
Secondly, because it kind of has all of the elements. I mean, it's the classic dichotomy between the proper woman and the not proper woman. And Lime is, in the end, the not proper woman. She's self-centered and kind of light and fluffy and, you know, basically good-hearted, but a little not really right for the main character.
Minmay, if I remember, she is an idol. She's a pop singer.
Yeah, she's an idol singer.
But she's also the childhood friend of the guy, right?
Well, she just meets him in the first episode.
Oh.
And, you know, it's anime, so he has an instant crush on her.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, she's...
Which persists almost to the end.
Right.
And then Lisa Hayase is the career woman, but who ends up being the one that's right for him.
Oh. Lisa, but, isn't she like the second in command or something?
Yeah.
Okay. And so how do they meet or whatever?
Oh, well, they also meet in the first episode where there's an Entradi attack, and at the time Rick's senpai, Roy Foker, is showing him how the Veritex work.
The Veritex are the planes. The robot planes.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So the Zentradi attack and Roy has to leave. And so Rick's just sitting in like a Veritech trainer. And Lisa Hayase appears and thinks he's a pilot and sends him up. So he's sent up into the middle of the combat. He knows nothing about combat flying or even really how to fly the plane.
Okay.
And so Roy Falker helps him out and saves him. And at the end of it, they're going back. And Lisa Hayase comes on. It's like, what the hell was that? And Kiko says, "Oh, that's that old woman who ordered me to go up and play." That's how you set the tone for their relationship for most of the series.
Right.
But, you know, it develops. And eventually, as it turns out, she's the right one for him. And, you know, there's just enough. Part of it is in the struggle which develops between Lisa Hayase and Lin Minmay.
Yeah.
Minmay has social skills. Minmay knows how to flirt and keep a guy interested.
Sure.
Lisa Hayase does not at all.
Yeah.
And a lot of the interest of the relationship comes from her attempts at romances that just don't quite work out. And it even gets, there's just enough fun creepiness to it. Because there's a point in the series where she's like breaking into his house.
Lisa?
And doing all of his chores, yeah.
What?
She like breaks into his house and then does, like, cleans up all of his shit and, you know, does his laundry and sneaks out of it because she's like that.
Okay. Oh, she's trying to, like, surprise him or something?
Well, it's by at this point in the series, he's kind of more about Minmay.
Okay.
But Lisa can't let him go. So,
right.
It's crazy stalkerness.
Okay.
But crazy stalkerness is the way of where it works out in the end, so it's okay.
What a lesson to teach. It's like, it's okay, kids. Just keep stalking. It'll work out.
But yeah, there is. There's a period where that's what she does. She breaks into his house, she does all of his stuff, and then leaves before he gets home. And he never figures it out. That's
oh,
the best.
My God. So she's just like in the mess hall the next day. Like,
basically comes back in and is like, "Oh, hey, everything's clean. Maybe Minmay came over and cleaned for me."
What? Wishful thinking.
Until finally, in the end, someone tells him. He's like, "Oh."
That's pretty good. The moment of realization, and that is that, in fact, what. What draws him to her?
Not entirely, but it's kind of where he starts to think, "Oh, maybe this is a possibility here."
Yeah. Oh, okay. So, and then from there it moves forward.
Yeah,
I got you. All right. Well, you know what, and so. What is it about it? What is it about this that makes it your favorite? It's the struggle, the identity. First of all, which one were you rooting for? You were rooting for Lisa, I take it.
Well, it's interesting. And again, one of the interesting things about it is it kind of shows the change from a younger person's idea of what love is to a more mature person's idea of what love is.
Right. So instead of just the glitz and glamour of the
yeah,
title.
Well, you know, Minmay is glamorous and kind of, you know, sweet and cute and, you know, more an ideal than like someone you would really want to hang out with.
Sure.
Whereas Lisa Hayase is the opposite.
Right.
You know, who has someone with real interests and skills and ambition and, you know, all those things.
Right.
So when I was a kid watching the series, I rooted for Minmay. Now as an adult, I root for Lisa.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I can get it. So this relationship kind of helped shape your view of relationships in general.
Yeah.
Different stages. And stuff. That's, oh man, good choice. Good choice, Rob. I'm digging it. Nice.
Yeah, man, you should definitely watch Macross again and then watch how the relationship develops.
Yeah, that's really good. I'm definitely going to do that. All right, man. All right. Well, thanks for the chat and good choice. And, you know, you've rounded out my episode, man. I really appreciate it. And I hope you have a...
I live to serve.
Well, you serve well. And I hope you have a good night, man. And I'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good.
All right, man. Bye-bye.
Catch you later, man.
All right. Well, that was pretty good, I got to say, for an impromptu episode. We talked about a lot of different stuff. Yeah, so thanks for listening. I hope you guys are all having wonderful Valentine's days or single awareness days and enjoying whoever you're with or wherever you are, the environment. And if you get a chance, come on down to Meltdown Comics, 7522 Sunset Boulevard in West Hollywood, and we can check out and we can handle all of your anime needs or comic needs or toy needs or comedy needs, because they often have comedy shows going on in the back, like right now. So yeah, thanks. And hey, if you want to hit us up on Instagram, we're Anime Addict Love, and if you want to hit us up on Twitter, we're also Anime Addict Love. Give us any sort of feedback. We'd love to hear from you guys. And yeah, talk to you soon. See you next week. Bye-bye.